Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin A.C. Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. I'm in Miami. Finally, the final leg of this interminable trip. Interminable partly because the Padres are 2-5. A lot of frustrating losses. Just came off a series loss to the Braves. I believe it's one series win in the last seven. Ryan, the trade deadline is 9 days away. Where would you like to start?
Kevin, I hate it when you're right. You had said the last time we talked, or maybe at the beginning of this road trip, that, you know, the Padres are trying to make a statement one way or another, but knowing the Padres, they'll probably go something like 5-5 or 4-6. To just get to 5-5, to sniff 5-5, they're going to have to sweep the Miami Marlins this weekend. But I think in this last series was proof again, there continues to be sparks of playoff caliber capability in there, sandwiched around crap. To me, it's, I am no closer to knowing whether they should either buy or sell today than I was a week ago.
That's because you are so rational, because I think it was well put that clearly there are. This isn't the Rockies. This is not the Angels. It's not even, say, the Giants. This is a team that does have that capability. Now, then you would argue, well, but you got to have that ability like more. You got to have that ability all the time. You can't always, you know, have to, like, for me, this discussion on this team begins and it can end with the starting pitching. But I love the way you put it, because that is true. And that's the problem. That's the problem for the front office. That's the problem for the fans, though. I think for a lot of fans, it translates then into, oh, they suck. This is the worst Padres team I've ever seen. And that's because, like, when I go to a restaurant that people have been raving about for months and the food is good, but it's not what they told me it was, in my opinion, then that restaurant wasn't good. The expectations for this team, as they should have been, were really high. And all that's to say, Ryan, you're correct. It's a confounding team and there are no answers. We don't have enough time. I bet you both of you and I could fill up a podcast with why they should buy, and we could fill up a podcast with why they should sell. Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, when we talk about expectations being high, expectations were high internally for this team. And certainly in the clubhouse, I think Las Vegas pegged them at 78 wins, right? At the beginning of the season.
Yes, because of the very reason that they have this problem now. Yes, the
pitch. Because they didn't have any starting pitcher. And since the start of the season, they've lost Nick Pivetta to an injury. He hasn't pitched in 3 months. Joe Musgrove has not made a single start for them. The guys who they signed, Griffin Canning, and this is worth getting into, Griffin Canning and Lucas Giolito have provided minimal contributions. Randy Vasquez was great until he wasn't, right? Walker Buehler was great until he wasn't. All of these things are going wrong. And I just think it's worth just sort of a reset to our listeners and our viewers here. This was not a team that was picked by anybody to win the division. This is a team that everybody expected to push for a wild card spot. And they are still technically pushing for a wild card spot, but things got to improve starting with this series against the Marlins, or else they will have no choice but to be sellers. I think if they lose 2 of 3 in this series, I think they're sellers. I think they have to be. What do you think, Kevin?
You know, Ryan, when it all comes down to it, I think you're right. I think that I could then put myself in their place or try to argue the other position and say that, well, I'd have to look up, lift my head up and say, what did the Diamondbacks do this weekend? Right. You know, what did the other teams ahead of them do this weekend? And I might be able to convince myself, oh man, there's still 6 days left. What if we go 6-0? And you know, all these flashes we've had and all that. But I tend to agree with you that if you lose 2 or 3 here, and a part of that is, while it's technically still possible for you to make a run, you've been telling your players, the players have been telling themselves, it's been obvious for a while, they needed to win. Mm-hmm. Like they needed to win. Like that was very important. And they haven't. 2 of 3 would mean that they went 3-7 on this trip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Again, and right. And against.
I've been pushing back on the, as you know, you and I talk about this all the time. If this doesn't happen, like if they don't go win these games, oh, that shows that they're not going to. No, baseball is about ups and downs, who you play, when you play, and blah, blah, blah. Like it's a long season, but there comes a point where you have to win.
And the Padres will play six games at home after this series in Miami. They will play against the two against the Rockies and four against the Giants. And Kevin, you would say, well, there's your chance. Okay, but you know what? Guess what? They're playing the Marlins now, and they played the Royals earlier in the week. That was their chance too. And I'm not going to assume that they're going to come home and get right if they can't get right against the Marlins, if they didn't get right after a week off against the Royals. I think, the frustrating part here, and I think super frustrating, at least for myself, watching on TV, is just the starting pitching. And perhaps nothing drove that point home more than what happened yesterday. The Padres, with a gift from God, or at least from Mauricio Dubon, right? Take a 3-0 lead off Chris Sale, a guy you never score multiple runs off. They take a 3-0 lead. I'm texting you, Kevin, baseball's a weird game. And you go, yeah, especially if this can hold. And Griffin Canning comes out and gets rocked. Well, I mean, moonshot home runs to Dominic Smith, rocked. Kevin, this is a crisis moment again for this team. What becomes of Griffin Canning?
I don't know, man. I mean, it's funny.
Was he on the plane to Miami?
He was. It's funny that Craig mentioned the bullpen when one of Griffin Canning's problems is giving up runs right away. Mm-hmm. Unless they can find something wrong with him, I have so much respect for what these guys do, but Griffin Canning is just he's a liability, and mm-hmm. and so there's just no way around it. I honestly don't know what they do with Griffin Canning. But we've reached that point, as they did with Herman Marquez and Lucas Giolito and Matt Waldron, of you cannot run this guy out there anymore.
Right, right. And again, when you shop, we talk about expectations here. You know, maybe there's a reason why Lucas Giolito and Griffin Canning were hanging out. Maybe there's a reason why Herman Marquez was willing to come to Padres without guarantee of a rotation spot. When you swim in those waters or fish in those waters, don't be surprised if the guys who you sign are just kind of guys. And, you know, it's funny with Griffin Canning. My frustration is less with Griffin Canning and more with the situation in which Griffin Canning is one of your five starting pitchers.
Absolutely. Oh. And that's what I would hope that the angst, and I know it's not, it's often personal for the player. Now look, this is a complicated thing. They didn't have a lot of money. They had to try to make this work. But understand, this wasn't even like try to make it work like Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha. Those were real money contracts. Yeah. This wasn't try to make it work like Nick Pivetta. That was a real money contract. Like, this was bargain basement Herman Marquez. Lucas Giolito amazingly got the most of any of them because, you know, he probably had been better than any of them recently, but still, it's a bargain basement. Walker Buehler, serious bargain basement. That was a minor league deal. Griffin Canning, bargain basement. Like, yeah.
And if you grew up watching the Padres like both of us did, Kevin, this feels very familiar, doesn't it? This is a name. This is a name. We talk about this guy because he's a name. If the team were better, he wouldn't be on the team, or maybe wouldn't be in the starting rotation. Right.
Right.
And I think this brings me to our next topic here, and it's Luis Ranjifo. One of the great stories of this season, to me, has been, in order, Samad Taylor and then Luis Ranjifo. I believe the guy who replaced Samad Taylor when Samad Taylor got hurt. Right. Luis Ranjifo is on fire offensively, to the point where he is hitting second and playing left field. He started in left field yesterday, a position he hadn't played in years. While that's a great story, let's also talk about the circumstances in which Luis Ranjifo is hitting second for a team that thinks it's going to the playoffs.
Yeah, it's even maybe a little more, even though he was an established major leaguer, it's maybe even a little more indicative than Samad Taylor. I mean, they're both it's the same thing. Well, Samad Taylor was a really great story because of basically a career minor leaguer. Right. But like, good story. Way to go. Really happy to see this. I think I can see some real some things about Luis Ranjifo. I love watching as a ball player, as you said. wouldn't be here if the team was really good, would be like on the bench and you're hoping you're not having to use him. How many times has this guy come up in clutch situations recently, right? Come through a few times, hasn't come through a few times. Okay. That's kind of what you would expect. Absolutely, man. Ty France even, right? Which might be the story of the year if you are into San Diego stories. But that's like an established guy who was like an all-star, but like he should not be your offensive MVP. That is absolutely nothing against Ty France. There should be at least one of those other guys that you're expecting/paying to be your star should be your offensive MVP.
Well, and that's one of the frustrations I think that I continue to have with this team is that they're getting career type years from guys who, if everybody else were playing well, you might sit there and go, maybe there's something to this team, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe, hey, Ty France is having a great year. Hey, Luis Camposano is having a pretty good year at the plate when he's healthy and when he's hitting, right? These guys are doing their part. You're getting contributions from them. You're just not getting contributions from the people you expected to be.
You won 93 games in 2024 because Donovan Solano was Ty France. And David Peralta was what these other guys have been, at varying times. Sheets, Taylor. Mm-hmm. Let's not get Renjifo again. We're seven games in, or six games in, or something. Those guys. But like, because also Manny had his near 800 OPS and was insane for the last 3 months. Toddy had a 900 OPS, I think, or something like that, but at least most of the year, even though he was injured. Merrill finished the season like 1,100 OPS over the final 2 months, something like that. That's when you go, thank you, Donovan Solano. Thank you, Ty France. You don't go, oh my gosh, where would we be without Ty France?
Exactly. And that's, as the Padres face this crossroads, I think one of the questions they're going to have to ask themselves is, do you trade Ty France right now? His value will never be higher. He was a flyer of a guy, may not be back next year. He's an Aztec. Everybody loves him. Popular guy. Good guy. But, do you trade him now? Do you trade Luis Renjifo now for anything? I mean, they traded Ron Marinaccio, and I know that was a different situation. They traded Ron Marinaccio for international signing money. At some point, if they've decided that they're sellers, or at least that they're not going for it, right? To me, standing pat means I don't know what it is. If they decide they're not going to go for it, the smart thing, the responsible thing to do is to trade guys like Ty France or Luis Renjifo or Adrian Morahone, who you're probably not going to be able to keep in free agency.
Okay, so you're right. So you're right in a vacuum, right? Because what did you get back? Was it really something you thought was going to help you in the future? Or were you trading these guys because of just basically what you just said, which makes all the sense in the world? You're also broadcasting to your fans, we're giving up. And there's a value in that. I don't know what the economic term would be, but there's a negative value in broadcasting to the team or to the people that have been filling your ballpark and buying your stuff and keeping you afloat that you're giving up on the season. Because, and I just say that, you think he didn't try AJ Preller to trade Josh Hader in 23 or right. Blake Snell in 23? The offers weren't there. They weren't. And if they're not there, which is something none of us, not Jeff Passan, Ken Rosenthal, none of us, executives on other clubs, none of us know what were the offers for the players. And that determines, or what was the price of the potential player, right? Yankees tried their butts off to get Mason Miller last year. Padres come in with Leo DeVries. Now, Yankees fans are like, why did we get Mason Miller? Well, because you didn't have Leo DeVries.
Well, that's a very Yankee fan thing to do, is to say, we want this guy, and since somebody else doesn't play in New York, they'll just give him to us, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how that's worked forever. Hey, Kevin, I'm going to finish with this, and then we'll get really quickly into the pitching matchups. To me, I think trading Mason Miller, most fans could look at that and go, okay, you're selling high on a guy. You're going to get an absolute haul heading into some labor strife. I think most fans deep down would understand if you traded Mason Miller and got a lot back. Trading somebody like a Ty France is giving up on the hope that this might turn, on the 5% chance that they could win 18 of 20 in August, right? That's when you're giving up guys who don't cost you any money and probably aren't going to get you much on the open, on the trade market. It just means that you've, I don't want to say given up, but you've moved on to 2027 and beyond.
You're correct. You're absolutely correct. Two different tiers by a lot. Like yes, someone, it's a good point. Not like someone doesn't have to blow them away for Ty France, but that's also then my point is, what are you getting for Ty France? Like a quad A player, or like somebody you're taking a flyer on, or like a 17-year-old you're taking a flyer on because someone that just someone desperately needs someone to play first base or DH for them. Right. And so they're going to give you the next Harlan Susanna, or like some, I don't know, you know, some 12-year-old they just signed. Right. There's so much that's different than just, we need to plug this hole now.
Yep, I know. Kevin, real quick, let's get into the pitching matchups here. German Marquez going tonight against Marlins TBA. Clayton McCullough has not named a starting pitcher there.
It's some guy named Gusto, just an update. Don't know anything about him. Should have just kept my mouth shut. But they did say that it's Ryan Gusto. 0-2 with a 4.70. Don't know anything about Ryan Gusto. I'm sorry.
Okay. Apparently the Marlins Gusto, Ryan Gusto.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Fine. Marquez, 4-2 with a 5.24 ERA. He's got a 4.2 ERA in four appearances since returning from the IL. Again, the hope is that he gets through the Marlins order twice. That's the expectation, right?
You got to, like, I wrote about this a few times, starting like a month ago. Mm-hmm. Almost need to look at this starting pitching staff holistically, right? Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, the pitching staff holistically. Like, these are not starters in your if they go five, victory.
Yep. Absolutely.
Except Michael King.
Right. Adjust expectations accordingly, right? JP Sears on Saturday going up against Yuri Perez. Padres are 2-3 in games started by Sears. He's yet to complete six innings with the Padres, but he has a 1.42 ERA against the Marlins in his career. Actually pitched, that was the one game where he pitched pretty well last year, was against the Marlins. He's going up against Perez, who, Kevin, I love to watch pitch. Have you seen this guy? He is 6'8". Six foot eight and blows guys away. He's 23 years old. Just fun to watch. That's going to be a tough one for the Padres.
It is. And that's their problem, is that you're running into guys, you know, like everyone, you just because you're playing a team that's struggling, they've lost nine straight. They have a better, they're above 500, but they've lost nine straight. Just because you're scuffling, here comes Perez. I mean, that's their problem. There's no margin for error for the Padres, or margin for like the other team actually being good.
Yep. Walker Buehler, 6-5 with a 5.23 ERA, will pitch Sunday against the guy with the best name in baseball, Jansen Junk. Jansen Junk is 4-6 with a 5.09 ERA. Man, you toss a coin in that one, don't you?
You do. You just hope that, I mean, it's like Jake Cronenworth said yesterday. Is it tough to have to win 7-6 or 8-7 if this is how the pitching staff's going to be? He didn't say that part. That's parenthetical. Right. If this is how the pitching staff's going to be, freaking score. That's where we're at. Score.
Right. And to Cronenworth's credit, he also said, hey, the offense wasn't picking anybody up when they were losing games 1-0 and 2-1.
It's really helping the hitters to just sort of be quiet now because they know what was happening earlier.
Right. Kevin, I put you on the spot at the end of every episode. Today is no different. How close are we to having a bullpen that resembles what we had on opening day, whether that's the addition of Estrada or Adam or even somebody like Jose Leclerc?
When you're going to start putting people out there that you don't know, might as well. That's who's out there now. But Jeremiah Estrada probably a week at least away, but no more than two. And so, okay, great. Jason Adam, there really isn't any idea, but the hope/belief is by September. They knew that him when he said middle of August that was extremely ambitious. So it's kind of like, about what they thought for Jason Adam. And look, that's shown up and this is how it happens, right? That has shown up in incredible ways, like yesterday's game, where they wanted to get another batter out of Griffin Canning, because you got to remember, they've got to cover the rest of those innings. Well, that next batter turned out to be Dominic Smith, who hit a home run.
Yep, absolutely. Bonus question here. Could either of those three guys be the closer if Mason Miller gets traded?
The three guys you mentioned?
Yeah.
Well, it depends. Is Ariel Morahone still here?
Would he get the first shot at it?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Without a doubt. Adrian Morahone is phenomenal. Like, he's had, if it weren't for some bad luck this year, he'd be last year's Adrian Morahone, who was an all-star and deserved it. Adrian Morahone could be a more realistic trade chip than Mason Miller, just because he's a rental and maybe there's not the high price. Maybe someone is willing to pay for him. Now, you're not getting the dominant closer. But I'm just saying, like, Adrian Morahone's incredible.
Padres Marlins three-game series, a deadline friendly series for us, Kevin. 4:10 p.m. tonight, 1:10 p.m. on Saturday, 10:40 a.m. on Sunday, and then you get to fly all the way back to San Diego after the world's longest, hottest road trip ever. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.